Ooh, what's up, internet? My name's Nerdy.
And I'm Clarus.
And this is Discussing Daggerheart, episode 2. We're going to call this Heritage, part 2, Community.
Yes, we've got a bunch of community cards that we're going to talk about in a minute here.
Yeah, so the way that Daggerheart breaks down your heritage is that your ancestry and your community are what make you. Say, nature and nurture,
it's
not
both.
Either or.
Yes, it is a combination of the two.
Yeah, fascinating. And you know what? I agree with that, because yeah. I am both Canadian and American, and I'm ashamed of both of them.
For different reasons. Yeah.
For different reasons.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think that's
fair. Yeah. This is a podcast where I discuss Daggerheart, and then my wife also does that, but better.
Well, we actually do it separately, and we actually just edit this together to make it look like we're having a conversation, but we actually, like, film this separately.
So. We cannot be in the same room with one another.
No, contractually.
You find the line
on
your
Vin
screen?
Vin Diesel and The Rock.
Yes.
Yeah. But I'm The Rock.
Yeah, I will break my arm in this movie so that I am stuck in a hospital bed for the... Anyway.
Wow, that's commitment. You know what? Proud of you.
This podcast is brought to you by MistyMountainGaming.com. If you want the best accoutrement for your TTRPG experience, go to MistyMountainGaming.com and use coupon code NERDYNIGHTLY15 for 15% off your order. MistyMountainGaming.com, they sell dice.
They do sell dice.
Clarus, before we dive into the podcast today, I believe we have a segment.
A segment?
A first ever on the podcast, a feed, any of our podcast feeds. We never do segments, but this is a segment. What's it called?
It's called Everything That We Got Wrong in the Discussing Daggerheart for Discussing Daggerheart.
Yes. We're going to be discussing the things about Daggerheart we got wrong in Discussing Daggerheart.
The title is in beta.
If you have an idea for the title for this segment, let us know. But the commenters of our last Discussing Daggerheart video left us some wonderful corrections for all the things that we didn't understand.
Yeah.
Clarus, do you want to start with correction number one?
Correction number one is that if there is no number before a D8, D10, D12, whatever the dice is, that means it scales with your proficiency, which is very important. So
when we were talking about the fawn ability, we were talking about how 1D8 isn't worth it beyond... Yeah.
Like level one.
Ever? even level one, 1d8 is like, there's a good chance you're just making the mark a stress, right? Mm-hmm. And so we got that wrong. It does scale with your proficiency. And so you could be doing as much as like 6d8.
Yeah. When we played our level 10 campaign, which we
linked down below,
linked all the fun stuff, I had several things that were scaled with my proficiency, which was 6. So I was dealing 6 of whatever dice the damage was, and it felt pretty nice.
Yeah, a 68 attack that you don't have to roll to hit with is a pretty excellent attack. So I would like to formally rescind my thoughts on the fawn ability.
Yeah, it's not bad.
The other thing that we got wrong is that I went out of my way to explain some math that I was not correct on. and so I just want to agree with the chatters who are pointing out that my understanding of the difference between rolling 2d12 and rolling 1d20, you are correct. I am wrong. Just flat out. I do think what's going to be interesting about this system, now that I've explored it far more, is that not only are the average rolls actually probably going to be higher than D&D, but I didn't really think about it. There are now 12 ways to crit.
Yes.
So you're probably going to have more crits. DCs might have to go up. I don't know. I think that it's one of those things where I spoke out of turn, having heard a quick bit of math about the bell curve, made an assumption, and I just want to point out that I'm incorrect, and those chatters who corrected me are right.
Wrong.
Because I am a big boy, and I can admit when I'm wrong. The final thing, Clarus, there was a third thing we were wrong about.
There was. Goats have square pupils, and I hate it.
Yeah, I don't like
rectangles.
It.
I Googled it, and now I have chronic nightmares.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. This is one of those things where, like, I get that it's true,
yeah,
but that doesn't make it
still
right.
Still don't like it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two pupils don't make a right, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, that is math.
That is math. Those are the things we got wrong from last episode. There's probably other stuff, but I don't care. We're going to move on to communities. Clarus, what community are you from?
Hidden Valley. Yeah.
Oh, wow. You're just straight up doxing your parents?
No, nobody lives there anymore.
I am? Oh, okay. I was
fine.
Like, oh, we're just dropping the actual place you grew up?
No, the first community we're going to talk about is Highborn, Being part of a highborn community means you were born into a life of elegance, opulence, and prestige.
Couldn't be us.
Nope, within the upper echelons of society. So you have advantage on any roles you make when consorting with nobles, negotiating prices, or leveraging your reputation to get what you want. Take an extra handful of gold at character creation.
This one is fun for a lot of reasons.
It's great for roleplay opportunities.
Yes. I think that it is, if you're doing like a city-based campaign, mm-hmm. this would be a really fun thing to have a member of your team have.
Yes, especially in like a capital city or yeah. a larger bustling city.
Yeah, I think it might be one that is a little bit tough to play early levels on your typical like adventuring on the road campaign.
Yeah, if you're doing like dungeon crawls and like forest escapades.
Yeah, I also just think this is one of the immediately we're getting into one of the things about Daggerheart that I think is a little bit tough to say whether it's good or not, which is the additional handful of gold at the beginning of a campaign. There's no prices in D&D, so like I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Like this... if a hotel room for a night, right? Or a room at an inn is a handful of gold, because that is the smallest unit of measurement that you have for money, then this is not great. But also, if you are running a campaign where a night at an inn is a handful of gold, then your campaign has to be so deeply focused on acquiring wealth, because you'll run out of money so quickly.
Yes, yes. This is the whole wealth mechanic is definitely geared towards, I think, a more... loosey-goosey campaign. There are some people who, when they play Dungeons & Dragons, they like to keep track of rations, every single dollar, in and out, like supplies, all of these things, which is not for every table. I feel like we're going to say that a lot when we talk about Daggerheart. Again, you're going to have different styles of what people want out of their, like, fantasy make-believe game.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm playing a fantasy game, I don't want to have to think about taxes. That's too real. And so the money system being kind of loose, I don't know how I feel about it, because it makes it difficult for me to be able to, like, determine... like trying to like upgrade and buy equipment and things like that.
I
feel like it is just going to be easier to like get it from a dungeon or as a reward or anything as opposed to like bartering and buying.
I think that specifically in relation to it as an ability, though, if we're just talking about this as a community ability, it is something that depending on how loosey-goosey your campaign is with how much things cost, this could be the most OP start ever, or it could be the most trivial start ever.
Yeah.
And it doesn't... I don't know how to explain what is in between those two things, because you're unfortunately, with a loosey-goosey money system like this, the onus becomes put on the dungeon master to have to make it up.
In terms
which
of...
is a lot of, in my opinion, as someone who has GM'd a lot in the last year, money is a lot to make up. Coming up with the prices of things at a magic shop is a lot to make up. And that's work. That's work that you're putting on a member of your team. That there's nothing in the book to help them with that. And so I do wonder how many people are just going to resort to stealing a money system from somewhere else, because you have one more handful of gold, but who knows what that means.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely think this one is great, has a lot of amazing role play capabilities, and that's kind of it.
Yeah. My turn. Next up is Loreborn. This feels like this could be me. I read so much as a child. Being a part of a lore-born community means you were brought up in a place that favored strong academic or political prowess. Ooh, political prowess. You are well-read is your ability. You have advantage on any roles you make that deal with the history, culture, or politics of a prominent person or place. The word prominent in there is the one that's going to get the most abused by your players.
Well, yes.
No, this dungeon is prominent.
Yeah, that's going to be totally up for debate. Like, whether or not it is well-known or not. Yeah, again, very role-play focused.
Yeah, it is. It's an interesting one, because the prominent person or place to me is interesting language in terms of being book read. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like when you're, I don't know. Yeah, that's lore to me isn't people and places. It's like mythologies and
histories. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it says history. Like, I think that it kind of just opened itself up to a more general thing as opposed to you're really good at history.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's, you know, like almost like current events. Like, you like history. You read the newspaper every morning. You're very, like, you've got the pulse
mm-hmm.
of the community, in a sense.
I think that this is a great ability if you're playing with Matt Mercer. And
there is a... What if you're playing Crown of Candy?
But I mean specifically Matt Mercer's style is that Exandria has an answer for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do those roles for history, even if it's not relevant to the game that they're playing at the table, there is a weird amount of backstory stuff behind every rock that you can overturn. And so this is weird, but I think that this is an ability that is better depending on the style of your GM.
Yes.
How much lore have they written into their world?
Yes.
Versus how much are they making up on the fly?
Which, you know, sometimes stuff that is made up on the fly is great and works great. But it would definitely be a little bit disappointing if your GM is not putting in the, like, backlog work if they're then not making stuff up on the fly. Like, you don't really know. Like, it kind
of
sucks.
I just think in terms of the usefulness of some of the abilities we're going to talk about later, this one and honestly the Highborn one are both a little bit more... are lean on the niche side.
Yes, yeah. Yes. I will definitely agree with that. Next up, we have Orderborn.
Orderborn.
Being part of an Orderborn community means you were raised in a place of great discipline or faith. And uphold a set of principles that reflect your experience there.
Couldn't be me.
Principles?
Faith?
The
only faith I have is the George Michael song.
The thing is called Dedicated. Record 3 sayings or values your upbringing instilled in you. Once per short rest, when you describe how you're embodying one of these principles through your current action, you may roll a d20 as your hope die instead of a d12.
When do you roll a d12 as your hope die?
Every time. You roll 2 d12s.
Oh my god. I'm like...
Yes. As your duality dice.
My brain was like, when do you use hope to add a d20 to a roll? Or a d12 to roll that isn't... Yeah. Right.
So you, instead of rolling 2 d12s, you roll a d12 and a d20, which, like... okay, here's the thing. Being able to do this once per short rest is not, like, super OP, but,
I don't know about that. That's a strong ability.
It is very strong because you're, like, not guaranteed, but there's a strong chance you're going to roll with hope, you know?
Yeah, but also, that's important. If you have advantage, suddenly you're rolling out of 38 instead of rolling out of 24, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're...
If you add advantage as well. Yeah.
That's a wild ability. See, like, compared to you get advantage on the lore of prominent people and places, this one is, like, 3 times a day you up your maximum roll by 8.
Definitely
is huge.
Less, like, campaign settings specific.
No, that's so useful. And and it is still roleplay heavy, right?
Mm-hmm.
It forces you almost to... kind of like if you're playing a paladin and you are playing in with a GM who will really push you on the, like,
the faith side.
Breaker. In a run of Baldur's Gate that I am playing, I managed to break my oath somehow while freeing slaves. Don't know how that happened.
Okay.
This really pushes you to be like, how are you? You have created this character who has these beliefs that are not your own, usually, right? Mm-hmm. How are you leaning in? Right?
Yep.
And I love an ability that rewards you for leaning into roleplay.
Yes.
In such a massive way. That's that is immediately the best of the 3 abilities we've
talked
about. That,
like, is so interesting to me. Yeah. So much you can do with that. Very juicy.
All right. Number 4, we got Ridgeborn. Ridgeborn. Being a part of a Ridgeborn community means you call the rocky peaks and sharp cliffs of the mountainside home. This is the perfect one for anyone who is born on Arrakis. Their ability, they live in the sieges, you know. They gotta hide in the rocks so that Shai-Hulud can't consume them.
Sure.
They're just sitting around waiting for Lisan al-Ghaib.
Can you tell that Dune 2 just came out? anyways.
The ability is Steady. Steady means you have advantage on traversing dangerous cliffs and ledges, navigating harsh environments, and survival knowledge. Also gain +1 to your armor score. Wild. That's
again
rocks.
Very niche.
No. This is amazing.
I mean, look, the +1 to armor score is great.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. If you're... Well, okay.
You get a permanent +1 to your armor score.
I guess you could... Okay, hear me out. If you were a DM, would you consider, like, climbing on the roofs of buildings and stuff, cliffs and ledges?
I would consider it a ledge, so yes.
Okay.
But I would consider harsh environments and survival knowledge. Like, if you're on a campaign where you're adventuring, this is one where not as good in a city, right? Yeah. So it is that kind of trade-off of, like, in a city campaign, Highborn, you're probably going to roll with advantage a lot more. But Ridgeborn, if you're crossing the countryside and it's taking days and you're crossing, Campaign 3 of Critical Role takes place in Marquette, which has a lot of deserts, right? I would consider desert encounters. You have advantage for everything that you're doing outside of the city.
Yeah,
right?
For, you know, survival checks to make sure you can, like, I don't know, like, find water or something.
I think that in terms of checks that you don't want to fail, having advantage on traversing dangerous cliffs is a check I want to fail less than I want to fail a persuasion check on a noble.
That is valid. Yeah. I don't think we have an official word on, like, fall damage in Daggerheart, but
I'm not sure how it works.
Sure, it's not nice.
Someone will mention in the comments down below, and it will be on next week's discussing the things about Daggerheart we got wrong in discussing Daggerheart. My favorite name for a segment ever.
Nailed it.
Yeah, this one also gives you advantage on a lot of checks and also a +1 to your armor score.
Yeah.
And so I kind of wish that, like, Loreborn had an additional ability, because, like, Highborn, you get the handful of gold and the advantages.
Yeah.
This, you get the +1 to your armor score and advantages.
Loreborn needs a little bear.
Yeah, it needs a secondary thing. It needs something to, like...
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you have a book, you also get, like, the most, like, recent book of smut released on the market or something like that.
I mean, I don't know if I would call that lore, but maybe...
That's my lore.
Maybe an idea of, like, maybe you have a contact of some kind. Like,
You get a library card that works at all local libraries.
I mean more like the, like, politics side of things. If you need an in with somebody, I need a meeting with the Duke of such and such city because
that might be a little too powerful.
Maybe, but it just gives you an in to know somebody who's like, okay, can you roll to persuade to then get into said... I don't know.
They can't get you in to see the Duke, but no matter where you go, there is an intern who can open one door for you.
Yeah. Only one door. And it's always a different intern.
I actually kind of love that.
You get to open one door for
I'm homebrewing that into our Daggerheart campaign.
I love that. Next
that
one.
May or may not be coming.
Secrets. Next community card is Seaborn. Being part of a Seaborn community means you grew up near a large body of water.
Yeah.
And its feature is safe harbor. Once per session, when you take a short or long rest, you may take one additional downtime action.
Now, obviously, during a short campaign or like a one-shot, this might not be the most useful, but in my opinion, this is my favorite ability.
Yeah.
In a campaign, this is the one that I want the most.
Yeah.
This is an SSS tier ability. Yes.
Being able to heal HP or stress or fix your armor or, like, whatever it might be. Or even just giving you opportunities for more, like, role-playing actions. Hey, maybe you're learning a new language and you gotta, like, spend some time to learn that information. Like, there are so many uses for this.
I think that this is particularly helpful for classes where you are using a lot of your resources as part of your ability set, right? Mm-hmm. If you have a lot of spells that you stress... Or if you are a tank who you know you're going to use a lot of armor slots, you're going to have to repair your armor every rest. But so for those of you who don't know, when you rest in Daggerheart, you get two actions of a list of possible actions.
Yes.
You get two actions, whether they are short rest or long rest. Mm-hmm. However, the efficacy of those actions are different. And in a long rest, there are a couple of other options. Additional options. This allows you to pick three of the options rather than two, which is just, if you can do health, stress, and armor in a short rest. That's huge.
That is, yeah.
Especially if you pair this with the elf feat that allows you to roll your stress away and potentially your health, you could end up with what is essentially four actions on a downtime.
Yeah.
Because this ability would give you an additional one.
Damn.
So I just think a Seaborn elf is such an OP combination of abilities for not in the fight, but for making sure that every time you come back from a rest, you are fully ready to fight again.
I'd love to like homebrew like a like selkie like sea elf type of like vibe.
Well, there are sea elves. We play a Dragonlance game every Saturday live on the youtube.com/nerdynightly, live from the set with our friends. And if you want to come check that out, Dragonlance, the setting has sea elves in it.
Yeah, yeah, very fun.
We haven't met any yet, but
no. But I've always loved that.
Speaking of great abilities, we're in the middle of my three favorites. This is the last of my three favorites. Slyborn. This says you have advantage on any roles where you're negotiating with criminals, detecting lies, or finding a safe place to hide. I love that.
I think that's great.
Insight check.
Lots of possibilities again.
Insight check. Of having advantage on any of the like personal ability things, detecting lies is, in my opinion, the most important one for a campaign.
People be
lying. People be misleading. I want to know the truth, damn it. I can handle the truth.
I'm just such a trusting person that, like, I get information and I'm like, oh, yeah, great.
Mm-hmm. I will say the one thing, I actually thought that this was a different ability. I was talking about the Underborn. This isn't my favorite ability. We're going to get to it at the end. This and Underborn are very similar.
Okay, interesting.
This and Underborn are very similar, but that's a tease for the final ability. So stick around to the end of the video to see what my other favorite ability is besides Seaborn and Ridgeborn.
This feels like the other side of the coin of Loreborn to me.
Yeah.
I almost wish there was like a little something else in there.
Yeah.
It's fine. Again.
Which there is for Underborn, which is why I prefer it to Slyborn.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll get to it.
But first, we're going to talk about Wanderborn. Being part of a Wanderborn community means that you were raised as a nomad, not having a permanent home, but experiencing a wide variety of cultures.
Before we even get into the ability, one thing I love about this for your DM is that they can bring characters from your backstory in wherever they want. Because they be wandering.
Yeah. It's like the Tinkers.
Oh my god, the Tuatha'an?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they could be wandering.
They could be wandering.
They could be a wandering.
Your perk thingy that you get is called Nomadic Pack. Add a Nomadic Pack to your inventory. Once per session, you may spend a hope to reach into this pack and pull out a common item that is useful in this situation. Worked with the GM to figure out what this item is. It's like a bag of tricks.
Once per what? Once per session?
Once per session. Yeah, so if you're like, oh, I need a grappling hook for some reason to scale
Makes so much more sense. I was like, GM, I have this arrow of dragon slaying.
I have a humongous health potion.
I have a superior healing potion.
Yeah.
What else do I have in this bag?
Oh my gosh.
Oh my god, I have a level 10 adventurer to help us with this fight.
You just bring a friend. No, it says common item.
I don't know what a common item is, but I do love this. I think it is very funny. I would lean into the Mary Poppins of it all.
Yeah, right?
You know what I mean? Like, I would be like, I want to play Mary Poppins as a Wanderborn.
That would be appropriate.
That is so funny.
I love it. Yeah. You just like pull out some like medicine. You're like, I actually have the cure to whatever ails you.
Interesting that this is the only ability. Or no, actually, this and Wildborn. But this is the first ability we're talking about where you actually have to spend a resource to use your ability.
Yes, you do need to spend a hope.
But yeah, common item. The amount that I think that this is going to cause tables to argue about what could be considered a common item, I already hate that conversation.
For me, it seems pretty clear that anything common is, like, something you might be able to, like, you know, find around a general person's house. Or, like, a general store,
okay,
you know?
Like, we have magic swords and lightsabers in our house. So, like,
but they're not real.
I don't think our house counts. Our swords are real. You could very much kill somebody with our very real steel swords.
But like, you already have weapons. So, if I was the DM and they're like, oh, wow, I pull out a sword. from here. It's a normal,
yeah, non-magical, yeah, yeah,
like, it's a sword so that I have a weapon. I'd be like, okay, I mean, sure, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that this isn't as broken as my brain says that it is. There's just something about my brain.
You are anticipating I pull out this crazy magical thing. Oh no, it's totally common. Everybody has one.
Just that someone will be like, oh no, I have an extra set of thieves tools. And I'm like, you just broke your... Fine, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's a common item. But I guess you do spend a resource. The one thing I will say about hope is you get so much hope in this game that having to spend it means literally nothing.
I don't know. When we played our level 10 shot, we were... Oh, you were burning through hope because you were stealing it.
The big bad had an ability where it wiped out all your hope if you failed a presence check.
Yeah, so that sucked.
That one, you guys were losing a lot of hope, but you were also gaining a lot of hope.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ellen had to spend 4 hope to use that ability. She spent 12 hope in that fight.
Yeah.
Just to use that one ability three times.
You're right.
That's the Wanderboar one, as a GM, it makes me nervous. I think it's a really good ability, but my chest starts to palpitate because my friends are nuisances and they're going to make my life harder because of it.
Mm-hmm.
We are on to the penultimate community of card. This one is Wildborn. Uh-huh. If you missed the penultimates, go watch it. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
We had fun. I'm not going to lie. Guys, the one shot that we did on Monday night is the most proud I've ever been.
So much fun.
A TTRPG thing.
Yeah.
I DM'd. Wildborn. Being part of a Wildborn community means you were raised by a clan deep in the forest.
A cult.
Yes. This is very... I just watched all of Exandria Unlimited this week, so I'm getting real Exandria Unlimited vibes here from Fira's town. But the ability is Lightfoot. Your movement is naturally silent. Gain advantage on any action rolls you make to move without being heard. Spend a hope to also grant this ability to an ally while they stay within very close range of you.
Mm-hmm.
An ally, players. One. You get one.
Yes.
So basically it's like a limited pass without a trace.
Yeah. For you and maybe a buddy.
Yeah. I think that's a great ability. I think it's very useful for rogues, rangers.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of abilities that really...
For Fifi. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's an awesome... you're going to use it a lot. You're going to use it in a lot of different situations, right? It's not quite as niche as I think Loreborn is.
For sure.
And I think that having the thing that I like about this one that none of the others have had so far, and I don't think Underborn has, is that there is a base version of it that you just get, and there is a thing that you can spend to make it better.
Yes.
I like that mechanic of the Wildborn.
Wildborn, yeah. Yeah.
That's just kind of a great ability. Advantage on self-checks is always good.
It's so useful.
Yeah.
In so many different situations that, if you were, if you were going into a campaign and you weren't sure if you were going to be doing more combat or more role play, I think that one's great for all kinds of campaigns.
Yeah.
Last but not least.
Oh, no, it's almost over.
Definitely not least. Underborn, being part of an Underborn society... Sorry, community means that you're from a subterranean society. I got that. Yeah.
You know what this is going to be used to create, right? Characters from Arcane.
Oh God.
What? They're Arcane all Underborn.
Campaign, yeah.
Daggerheart, ooh, and Arcane.
Yeah. That'd be pretty sick.
That would be fun.
You get the ability Low Light Living. When you are in an area with low light or heavy shadow, you have advantage on rolls to hide, investigate, or perceive details.
Yeah, the reason why, so we were talking about the Slyborn one. I thought this was, I mixed them up in my head.
It's fine.
This is one of my favorite ones, because there's no dark vision in Daggerheart.
Yeah.
So I think that having advantage in low light situations is far more useful in this campaign, because as far as I can tell, the dark vision doesn't exist.
Yep.
And so being the, person who can see in the dark is... I personally think that if you're going to do a long campaign where you might do many dungeon dives, this is an almost necessity to have someone in your party have.
Definitely. I think that the dark vision ability in Dungeons & Dragons is kind of given away too liberally. And everyone in the party except maybe one person will have
except
dark vision.
Except, hilariously, cats.
The Tabaxi. Yeah.
No, Tabaxi have it.
Oh,
the cat stat block. When you so this becomes a thing in Critical Role campaign too.
Oh.
That got really hilarious is that Frumpkin is usually a cat.
Yeah, and does
not have dark vision.
Wild.
But cats in real life do.
Yeah.
But only Dungeons and Dragons cats don't. It's very funny.
That is very funny. But yeah, I think that it kind of negates, like it kind of takes away from a mechanic that you could use for a campaign, going into darker rooms, darker dungeons. If everyone has dark vision, you can't really play around with that. But in Daggerheart, because there's no dark vision, it gives the DM a lot more opportunities to play around, especially, I think, with fear.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's very fun and exciting.
I somewhat disagree with you only because I think that the fun, just to defend D&D for one second before we start discussing Daggerheart again, I like that people have different ranges on their dark vision, and as a DM, it gives you room to play around with how far into the dark different people can see,
but who
sees what as far as information.
Yeah, but it's really only like one race that I can think of off the top of my head that gets 120 feet.
But I'm saying, like, say you have one person has 120 feet, a couple people that have 60, and then some people that have none, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to make that choice. Like, are you going to put lights out for the human character,
mm-hmm.
or is someone going to lead them through the dungeon so that you're not announcing yourselves? I just think there's more ways to have fun with it.
My only counterpoint is that you'd have to have a dungeon that had, like, very long, large rooms to, like, have it be useful at 120 feet, which isn't out of the question for sure.
Yeah.
But again, campaign dependent or dungeon dependent.
But this one I think is great. I think that I think the unsung hero of this is the ability to perceive details.
Yes.
I think like you really focus because it feels like such a rogue ability, right? The ability, advantage on rolls to hide. Obviously, for sneak attack, you're going to want to take this. Investigate. Being able to perceive details, though.
Yeah.
Advantage on ability to perceive details in the dark is wild because half of the time it is night.
Yeah.
And having a person in your party who can find details at night,
mm-hmm.
you want that person at the front.
Pretty clutch, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Especially if you're, like, stuck somewhere. You're mm-hmm. trying to, like, find a way out or maybe into a place. Like, it's gonna come in handy.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that there's only half as many cards, so there isn't as wide a variety, I think, in these abilities.
Yeah.
And I don't think there isn't really, like, a scaling issue with any of these. I think they're all pretty mm-hmm. the same throughout the whole campaign.
Yeah.
They're either going to be, other than Seaborn, which I think obviously is by far the most useful.
Yeah.
And is by far the best ability. When I made my beta test character, the closed beta before this open section right now, that I gave them feedback on, I went Seaborn because reading through the abilities, it's just the one that seems like a no-brainer in terms of how overpowered it kind of is compared to everything else.
Yeah.
But I also really like the Ridgeborn. I think that there's a lot of ways to play every one of these.
Mm-hmm.
And even the things that I don't think are as, like, powerful
mm-hmm.
Or are going to be used less, I think that there's really fun role-playing in every one of these.
Yeah.
And I like that there is nothing... My favorite thing about it is that, like, Loreborn is, like, you're part of a community that has a tradition of reading and politics, right?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really tell you what that community is. It doesn't give you a lot.
It's non-specific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all of these you can kind of attribute to any kind of community that you want as long as the tenets of that community fit within your community card.
Totally.
And I think that by not kind of pigeonholing any of these too harshly, except maybe like Wanderborn, because nomadic is going to be nomadic.
Sure.
But that is the least pigeonholed in its own way, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like that. The possibilities there are still vast because... Yeah, it was like one thing that one of my like least favorite parts about character creation in D&D 5e is mm-hmm. the like picking your I don't even know what they call it.
Your background.
Yeah, yeah, outcast or artisan or noble or like whatever it is. They're like a lot of them I think are slightly too specific and like they never really end up mattering to me.
Yeah.
I think because they are slightly too specific, I'm like, well, that doesn't fit my character and that doesn't really fit my character. These are so open-ended. You can chat with your DM and you can come up with pretty much anything from all of these options.
So. Yeah, I've never once in any D&D thing I've ever done actually filled out what my background was. Like, I've always written...
Well, you're missing out on items then, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never taken those items. I've never filled it out. Not one time. Because mm-hmm. I don't want to be... I want... Yeah,
like,
I just
no,
have
I
never cared.
I want to make up my
So
character.
I make my backstory. Yeah. This is a nice thing where I'm like, oh, I have the Orderborn ability. That's going to help inform the world that I create of my hometown. Mm-hmm. And these are all of the ways that I pushed back on my community growing up and how I stood out or how I was a rebel or mm-hmm. how I conformed and how the adventure that we're going on is me trying to rebel against this card, right? Yeah. Finally leaving my order-born society and finding like solace or finding camaraderie with someone from a wanderborn society, this thing that mm-hmm. I've never experienced before.
Right.
I think that this kind of gives you an ability that's useful, that is going to be a part of your day-to-day, but at the same time gives you the inspiration of the framework of your backstory mm-hmm. rather than like, this is the job you used to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
And here you get a chess set because...
Yeah.
You played chess growing up.
You have a letter that the carpenters yeah. really they let you into their carpentry meetings.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
yeah.
No,
this,
I agree with that.
This is very fun. I love these. I love that the combination it makes for the heritage.
Mm-hmm.
It's very fun.
Yeah. I am a big fan. I'm always going to be Seaborn, though, because it's too powerful.
It's
almost too powerful.
It is really rude.
I think that it yeah. would still be powerful if it was just that you got an extra one on a long rest.
Even that, yeah, would still, yeah.
It but is once per session, but...
I guess it depends
tough.
How many times
it's
you're
tough, yeah.
resting per session. Because a lot of times we go several sessions without resting. So
well, and that's kind of my thing, right? Mm-hmm. Is that for me, I feel like... There might be comments on this video where people are like, well, it's you're not doing it every rest because it's not like you're resting. It's not like you're only resting once per session. But like, yeah, we kind of
it depends.
Do.
I mean, yeah, like we went how many, like 3 full sessions without any rest?
No, we went 3 sessions without a long rest.
Okay.
But you guys
and
had
I think we had one short rest
yeah.
in those 3 sessions just because things were happening. And that's... Not like a good or a bad thing. It just is.
Yeah, but I think that's also my style is that when I think that this is going to be a different DM thing, right? Because for me, when I am DMing, I usually, it's either like fully downtime and you guys are like RPing and figuring stuff out in town, or the stakes are pretty high. And if you sit down for 30 minutes, there's going to be a consequence.
Yep.
Because I think that that's the thing that that's my style. I like that if you're in the middle of a dungeon, if you decide to take a short rest, there's a consequence for sitting down.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the way that I keep tension going in games.
Yeah.
And so for my style, the Seaborn ability is basically every time you rest.
Yep.
And you don't get those opportunities as often. And so this is really useful. For another DM style who's like, we're going to do like 3 small combats that take like 20 minutes. You can rest in between them. I do understand how this ability is a little bit less OP in that situation.
Yeah, I just think out of all of them, it does seem the most powerful to me.
Yeah.
I think that there are a couple, like, Loreborn and...
the plus that, when like, your armor score at low levels for Ridgeborn is really great.
Yeah, that's really nice.
We learned at our level 10 one-shot that plus 1 means nothing at high levels, because I was rolling 3d20 plus 10, 3d20 plus 10.
Yeah, yeah, a plus 1 when you are level 10 is definitely less useful, but at level 1, it can save your life. Yeah, I don't know. I think something like Loreborn maybe needs a little bit of juicing up. But other than that, these are really fun.
Just a little something. It's the only one that I think needs a little something. And honestly, Slyborn. Loreborn and Slyborn, I would give a little bit of a...
Yeah.
Like the handful of gold that Highborn gets, which isn't a huge deal.
Yeah, just
it's not game-breaking, but it just like zhuzhes it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Zhuzh.
Look.
What?
Zhuzh. What are you zhuzhing over there? If you like this video, like and subscribe to the channel. If you don't, hit the dislike button. Leave mean comments down below because the algorithm god is hungry and we must feed her. This episode, that algorithm goddess is the women
Seaborn.
Of Arcane.
The wow, yeah. wow. Season
all of them.
2 coming soon.
Pink hair, blue hair, the other one. Clementine.
Oh my god. The thing is, I know you know their names and you're just being a dick.
I know. I'm just trying to, like, get comments on the video so that we get More engagement.
Comment who the algorithm goddess is from
just
Arcane.
Name characters from Arcane just, in our comments.
Name them. Go for it.
Next week, we will be starting off with our character series. We're going to be breaking down every single class week by week. Mm-hmm. And I believe alphabetically, the first class is going to be
Bard.
Yep. It's might be a long video. We're not quite sure how long it's going to go yet because our plan is to go through every spell at every level. And so it's going to be, these are going to be some beefy breakdowns on our thoughts on the entirety of the Bard, which from our campaign on Monday, we learned become Time Lords
pretty much,
a certain point.
Depending on which like Bard you take. But yeah. Pretty much.
Our good friend Fariha created Callista, who was a Bard, but was actually just a Time Lord who was able to enlist dragons to help her kill gods.
Why not?
Really, you should go watch that one shot. It is so fun. If you want to follow us on the internet, you can. I'm at Nerdy Nightly.
I'm at Claris Polaris.
And as always, do something nerdy tonight.
Bye.